Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Let's Get Going Toileting Ideas conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance at any time, please press the star followed by the zero on your touch-tone phone, and an operator will assist you. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, April 14th, 2009. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Robert Miller, Executive Director of National Fragile X Foundation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Damien. So welcome, everybody, to one in a many-year series of webcasts, audio webcasts, on a variety of topics having to do with Fragile X, hosted by the National Fragile X Foundation. And I want to thank ACT Teleconferencing, who have made these webcasts available for the Fragile X community for many, many years. So this tonight's webcast is called Let's Get Going, Toileting Ideas. We have actually three special speakers tonight, Dr. Karen Riley, Cindy Rogers, and we've added a third guest, Jane Dixon Weber, who many of you know as the coordinator for support services at the National Fragile X Foundation. Both Cindy and Jane are parents of children with Fragile X syndrome, and Dr. Riley has many, many years of experience working in the Fragile X field. Dr. Riley has lectured extensively throughout the U.S. on behavioral and educational interventions for children with neurodevelopmental disorders, currently an assistant professor at the University of Denver. And again, extensive experience in this field. Cindy Rogers, as I said, is a mother of two boys affected with Fragile X syndrome. She has been a member of Developmental Fragile X for 5 years, has served as the parent liaison at Children's Hospital Child Development Unit in Denver for 6 years, and been involved in the Fragile X community for 17 years. Jane Dixon Weber, as I mentioned, is a staff member at the National Fragile X Foundation, the parent of a, I believe, 20-year-old son with Fragile X syndrome. Jane, I think I have that age right.
That's correct.
And has been involved and recently authored an article in the new Foundation Quarterly that addresses this subject. Welcome, everybody, and welcome guests, and welcome listeners. Now, we have many email questions that we've already received, but if you have a question that you would like to have read on the air, you can email throughout this call, NATLFX, that's N as in national, ATLFX, at fragilex.org, and we will read that over the air. You can also call in at 1-800-218-8862. Let me repeat that number. It is 1-800-218-8862, and we can take your call over the air. We'll have time for just one question from our callers. So I'm going to get our conversation started tonight by just saying hello to our guest, Jane and Cindy and Karen. You know, we have a semi-humorous title here tonight for the call, Let's Get Going. Jane recently authored an article in the Quarterly called Please Don't Poo-Poo This Article, and I know we all chuckle about that, but I think we all realize that this is a very, very serious subject, and this is a subject that can just drive parents nuts as they struggle to get it resolved. So we want to, while we can all chuckle about, you know, the titles and the references to toileting, I think we all want to treat this with the seriousness that it deserves. So with that said, I think we might want to start with, I'm just going to ask, open it up first of all to our guests and see if they have any introductory comments they'd like to make. Dr. Riley, is there something
I would agree with what you just said about the seriousness and the level of frustration that can accompany this. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, we've got a great broad range of questions that have already been submitted, and so we'll be able to address at least in part everybody's some concerns that people share. I think it is very important to note as we talk about these things a couple of general things. One, that this is that we're, at least I am, going to take a pretty holistic approach to this. It is a behavioral change kind of an issue, and there are lots of factors that can contribute to challenges, particularly with a child with Fragile X. So there are cognitive challenges, there are sensory issues, there are physiological issues, there are behavioral issues that can impact this, and gross and fine motor issues. So I think that one of the things that hopefully you will hear, that we won't be just talking about one way to address this, and there will be follow-up questions, I'm sure, or we will speculate. When I read these, I think about, well, I'm going to assume this, or I will give a couple of options if this is the case or if this is not the case. We do need to look at language. We do need to look at gross and fine motor when we are looking at potty training as a behavior change. So that would be one thing that I would have to say.
Good. Cindy, anything to add to that?
Well, I can say that in our boys' lives, that toileting has certainly been an ongoing issue for them, and even though I consider them to be pretty well toilet trained, I would say we still have issues occasionally, even though our boys are 18 and 20 years old. So I think that it's a shared frustration with many, many families, and something that's a continual work in progress.
And Jane?
I would just like to echo what Cindy said, and just, I mean, I can remember being extremely frustrated when Ian was very young. I couldn't understand why he just didn't get it. And then, once I worked through some of my own issues, then it truly does become, like Cindy said, a work in progress. And even Ian at 20 years of age, we still have issues with it on occasion.
So as we start taking some of the questions or reading some of the questions, I want our listeners to understand that we're going to be graphic in our discussion, because that's, I think, the only way you can talk about toileting. And I think we also want to remind listeners that because there's such variability in how Fragile X syndrome affects individuals, you're going to have great variability in the ages at which children master their toileting skills. So in today's call, we're going to be talking about some teenagers and even young adults who are still working on some of those skills. We're also going to be talking about young children, including young children who are well on their way to mastering the skills. So I'm going to start with just an email received just recently here about a teenager, 16 years old, who has been very independent in the bathroom for years, except for wiping. After a bowel movement, he will try, but with only occasional success. We've worked with him over and over. This is from Joe, by the way, using flushable wipes. He seems not to want to get into all the important parts. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. So as I said, we're going to jump right into this.
Well, Cindy, do you want to take that?
Yeah.
Some of the suggestions that your son's worked with around the shower might be really interesting to talk about at this particular point.
And actually, that's the one issue that we still have, is wiping.
Okay.
And I can tell you a few of the things that we've done that have helped. In that person's, I can say one good thing they're doing is, if you try something that's partially working, I think to do it from start to finish and to continue to work on accuracy is a method that I've found really successful. The other thing that we found after we had a therapist come and evaluate the situation, we couldn't do it live, of course, but was that our older son is really tall, and he was having problems with balance. And so we installed a grab bar next to our toilet where he can bear weight so that he could be more accurate with wiping. whether using toilet paper, loads of toilet paper, or we also tried the flushable wipes. And that did help. It didn't completely solve the fine motor part of the problem, but it did solve the balance issue that he was having, sort of a fear of getting in there. You know, whether we did it from the back or the front, it was still an issue with just the balance. So that's one suggestion I would give.
I would like to throw out one idea, because we, too, still have that issue. And and part of my concern is that that there can be lots of wiping, that if it goes down the toilet, it can clog the toilet. So one thing that we sometimes have an option of having, like, a plastic bag available in the bathroom, and part of our instruction is you wipe, whether it's with wet wipes or toilet paper, and you have plenty of toilet paper, you can put it into the plastic bag instead of putting it down the toilet if you want to, and then if there's that much of it, and then you wipe until there's no color left, until there's no more color left, yeah.
The other thing we did, is we installed a new toilet that is actually a higher seat that helped as well, because our son is tall, and it has a 4-inch trap, which means that nothing gets clogged.
Okay.
So that helped with the too much toilet paper issue.
I didn't even know such things were available. That's
yeah,
a great tip.
I have a plumber for a husband, so he's...
Okay. Very good. Very good. You know, our another email from Jill talking about her 12-year-old son. Same thing. She said his motor coordination is a bit off, but he also very anxious about it. No surprise there, and does not like to get his hands dirty. I think you guys are already addressing a lot of those issues, but thought you might want to, if there's anything else to say to Jill about that.
Well, I think that I think it's great to, again, I love the talk about looking at this holistically and thinking about balance and stability and all of those kinds of things. I mean, if the dirty part of it is of concern for him, I mean, we did have one little guy that was using gloves. Now, that's not a great option at the beginning. But if that's the interference part, and I think that this one said that they, this is not the one. There are a couple things that I would think of. One, that he could wear gloves, if that is the part that's interfering, that he doesn't want to get it on his hands, etc. The other thing that I would use, and some of these, and this talked about a little bit of anxiety, that he seems, his motor's a bit off, and then he seems anxious about it. Again, the use of social stories for toileting is great. And so you can show the child even kind of, we've talked about social stories a lot. There's lots of documentation about it, but either using gloves, which is an option, and or what happens if he does get some poop on his hand, what's he going to do? And the whole idea that, he got some poop on his hand, and then he went over and he washed it off, and his mom was there to help him or whatever it is, and then his hands were clean and he was okay. So that whole idea of what if kind of that bad thing happens, sometimes he pooped and he wiped himself and it was hard, but he didn't get any on his hands. But sometimes, one time he did get it on his hands, and he just went over to the sink and he washed them off with soap, and then he was fine. And so that idea of what if the worst thing happens and I get poop on my hand, then what am I going to do? The other thing from a sensory perspective, and those of you that work with OTs, you might want to think about, we talk about getting that body ready to do something. So if his hands are hypersensitive or not, maybe they're low tone, but the tactile part of it is he's hypersensitive to sticky stuff or whatever, then you can do some, have it part of his sensory diet be around those hands before the pot. So part of his routine is, before he sits down, maybe he washes his hands or maybe rubs it with a washcloth, something that's real functional and practical, and then kind of so that it's not such a toxic feeling to have something wet or to get something on your hands, if that makes sense. So again, you want to kind of prepare the body in any way that we can so that the response of getting something on there isn't quite so bad. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Karen, I wonder if now that we're about a fourth of the way into the call here, if it's a good time to just stop for one moment, take a step back, and if you would remind us why toileting is such an issue with Fragile X syndrome. Is it strictly cognitive? Is it strictly sensory? Is it strictly anxiety? Is it a combination of all of those things? From your experience.
Well, from my experience, it's a combination of everything, and it's not unlike it's kind of the perfect storm when we think about a behavior that taps all of the things that can be anyway challenging for our guys and our girls for that matter as well. So the it happens in a place that it happens in a bathroom, and bathrooms have smells, sometimes good smells and sometimes not so good smells. When you're in the bathroom, sometimes bathrooms are echoey and the sounds are unpredictable, and the flushing can be fun to watch, but the sound from a sensory perspective can be really scary, and that can be something that's really difficult for us. The whole idea of even getting to the point where you can go potty, so if we think about the muscle coordination that's required for that, that you have to be able to pull your pants down. So we've got low tone generally, okay, and balance issues that are associated with that, and we got to get those pants down while we have the urge to go, okay, and when we're sitting on the potty, okay, we've got low tone, and so it's kind of hard to balance up there, and we've got, if you're up off the ground, especially if you're a young child, you might be, your feet are dangling, you got a little bit of gravitational insecurity going on, so again, that sensory thing comes up. From a language perspective, the whole idea, and there were lots of comments about these from these emails that said he's not telling us, he doesn't let us know. We know that very young kids with Fragile X, when we're talking about this, and kids later, have difficulty with language. And so the whole idea of communicating what I need to do and what I want to do and getting that out in a timely manner can be really, really difficult. Not to mention kind of the anxiety about that and sharing that. From another sensory perspective, the kids don't always have good feelings or accurate feelings about when they need to go. And we do have kids who have, because of just their own makeup in their guts, we do have kids that have more kind of gut problems, as well as our kids are oftentimes on more medication, and so those can really loosen the stools, or it can cause constipation, which then we've got, we're not sure if it's going to be a fart, or then there's poops going to come out, or, what's going to go on with those. So we've got also a lot of physiological issues that can impact the whole toileting experience. So we think about it from that perspective, it's pretty impressive that we get anybody to be toilet trained, to be perfectly honest.
So it sounds like you would agree that parents need to be careful that they don't assume that this is simply behavioral, that the child the young adult is simply refusing to use the toilet properly, could if he or she wanted to, but is refusing. That fact may be the minuscule of the explanations or of the situations.
Right. I think that's such a great point, Robbie, and that just like Cindy mentioned about that, I mean, she probably watched her sons go to the bathroom, a thousand zillion times, right? And the idea of thinking about, God, I never thought of the fact that he has trouble balancing while he's wiping. Oftentimes we do need somebody, or it can be beneficial to have somebody outside kind of take a look at that or talk through it. This is what's going on, because we do get focused on, you know, well, he just won't do it. And sometimes, especially because we have kids who have inconsistent patterns, sometimes he can do it, and then other times he won't, is usually what parents will say to me. He's been doing it really well, and now all of a sudden he won't. Those are, you know, sometimes kids are pistols, let's just be clear. But more often than not, something is interfering with that. And that's the challenge is, and we look at it, you know, I look at it from a very holistic approach. What's going on cognitively? What's going on social-emotionally? What's going on with the sensory system? What's going on with physiology? Is there something changing with the diet? Or growth even can change those kinds of things. So I think it's a great point to not assume that because they were able to do it or they are able to do it sometimes, that when they're not able to do it, that it's just being a pistol.
Okay, thank you.
Karen, I think that's so accurate. One thing I would say, too, is even if, you know, like when my son changed schools, the toileting schedule changed, and his behavior and reaction to that changed. So even something subtle can change.
Right.
You know, when they're doing really well, and then all of a sudden, maybe they're not.
Right, and the problem is that goes back to that language part, which is they're not great about being able to tell us what that change is. You know, it would be much easier if we could just look inside, or they had great language, or they could say, you know what, I'm not going to the bathroom because last time I went, you know, the toilet flushed on its own and I'm really scared of the sound. We have to kind of investigate that way and assume that there are these other things based on their phenotype. And that's what makes it challenging for parents. And, you know, we got to remember it's challenging for the kids, too. It's not that much fun for them.
No, absolutely. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, that's this good lead-in for this question we have from Sue. And she says that when they actually take their 7-and-a-half-year-old son into the bathroom, he's about, you know, 80 to 90% accident-free. It's the communicating that he needs to go into the bathroom that's the problem.
I have one big suggestion for that one. I saw that question, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what happened to us.
Okay.
We put a picture of a toilet at about 10 places in the house, and I just used Velcro.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my son, and I had to model it for him 100 times before he did it himself. But if he needed to go or he went in his pull-ups, I would just say, you need to go to the toilet. And I'd pull that off and give it, you know, say, oh, I'm going to give it to Mommy. And then we'd go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go to the toilet. You need to go to the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so then he could go and pull that picture off and bring it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go.
So a laminated photo,
yes.
Velcroed.
All over the house.
All over the house.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, any way that you can use, whether it's a picture exchange system, a sign, you know, whatever it is so that they can, if it's a word approximation, but Cindy did the exact right thing is, you know, make it available to him, even when it's post, you know, when the accident has already happened, don't get angry, you know, you because what he needs to do is make the association that this means poop. You know, this means I got to go to the potty. And so the more opportunities that he has to make that connection, then he'll be much more successful. But it does take a really long time to do that. And I any way it is possible, you know, pictures, work with your speech therapist around that, you know, whatever communication seems to be better or best for your kid. You want it at, you know, when, like Cindy's describing it initially, to be just so available. So if they can't use the sign, I think that what Cindy did was really creative and really great. We want to be able to take that on the road so that he can use that when he gets, you know, to school or when we're out somewhere. But it certainly doesn't hurt to start off with lots and lots and lots of opportunities so that he can be really successful. We always want to start with things being really successful.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, moving to the kind of the next step, I mean, I still see Ian sometimes do, you know, the bathroom dance. And
what is the bathroom dance?
Well, he starts moving around, and I've learned that means he has to go to the bathroom. And even though he can tell me that that he has to go to the bathroom, sometimes it doesn't register as fast with him, I think, as it does with me. I'm looking, you know, I'll watch him and he'll start kind of dancing around and I'll say, do you need to go to the bathroom? And he says no. And then within a minute or two, he goes, I have to go to the bathroom. And so, you know, going back to the sensory thing, it's very interesting to, you know, for me to be able to see it before he actually realizes that he has to go. At least that's, you know, that's my perception of it.
Very good.
Great.
I'm going to read a question from Jill, because I just want to move around some of the different age ranges and subjects here. And excuse me, from Jennifer. And Jennifer says that typically you hear about readiness signals in typically developing children. Do you recommend waiting for these same signals before starting to train? My son is 2.5 and showing none of the readiness signals. When he sees a toilet, all he can think about is splashing in the water. Is it possible to teach the readiness skills? I'll just add that Jennifer goes on to say that reading some of the stories on the Internet about this have terrified her. But let's talk about readiness skills and maybe reassure Jennifer that she doesn't need to be terrified about this issue.
Well, this is Cindy. I can say something. Any time I try to introduce something new, I always model it first. And we use a lot of picture schedules in our house. So if I'm introducing a whole new scheme of some task, whether it be toileting or anything else, I just want to model it from start to finish every time and break down the steps as much as my kid needs. Now, my two boys are different as far as those. So, but if it's 10 steps I want to teach, I'll just model that every single time until they get it. And it could take a long, long time, or it could take a little bit of time. It depends on the motivator. It depends on what the task is. It depends on if they want to do it. But I don't think it's too young to start some kind of modeling the task. I don't think, you know, if the child doesn't get it, I don't think it's too soon to start something.
Yeah, I think I would agree the whole modeling thing and being really open about it and letting them watch that and lots of books. There are tons of books on pottying and videos on pottying and stuff like that. My only concern is that in this particular thing, and not unlike some other things, what I don't want this parent to do is to try too soon when physiologically the child is actually not ready, and then we cause a lot of frustration. Because when we talk about this with younger children, if the child is not dry for, a couple hours at a time, this is probably not going to work yet. If the child can't sit for, more than a couple minutes at a time, he's probably not quite ready and some things like that. So I agree with Cindy. I think that it's never too soon to model that stuff and because it might take a long time, and she's right, or it might not take a long time. The only concern that I have is that when we put a child in a position where they're not physically ready or physiologically ready or cognitively ready, and they don't have any words or those kinds of things, it is a bit of a setup for failure for the kid. So lots of introduction visually, but perhaps waiting on the actual, trying it or putting tons of effort into it until we see some of these better signs that the child actually can be successful with, even if it's that the parent's trained, getting the child on a schedule and things like that. So that would be my only worry, because I think Jane said it well about, and maybe this was before we talked, maybe before we came on the air, but when her attitude changed a little bit, then things changed as well. And the parents that I've worked with, when they get frustrated, then that I always talk to them about stopping. And so I want everybody to be successful around that before they start. As far as training them to be those readiness steps, some of that is just maturation. We just have to allow the bodies to the bladder to be a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger. We need to allow for the language to catch up. But working on the foundations for that, so you know, using a good communication system and teaching them cause and effect that way, I think those are great building blocks for making the toilet training experience much more successful. And I would second what Robbie said, that it doesn't need to be terrifying. These guys are, I would defer to both of these women about that I think it can be a struggle, but I don't think it needs to be terrifying. And having someone else talk to you and support you through that process, I think, is really important, because we don't want people to be terrified of that process.
Good point.
I'm going to interject something just because we're at the halfway point in tonight's webcast. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the webcast Let's Get Going, Toileting Ideas with Dr. Karen Riley, with parent Cindy Rogers, and with parent Jane Dixon Weber. This is a part of an ongoing series put on by the National Fragile X Foundation. And these are actually, this series of webcasts are follow-ups from our last international conference, from some of the sessions that were of very high interest. These are follow-up conversations with faculty from that conference. We have a lot of email questions. You can email a question to natlfx@fragilex.org. That's natlfx@fragilex.org. Or you could call in at 1-800-218-8862. 1-800-218-8862. So at this point, I'm wondering if any of our guests have a very pertinent question that they've received that they want to read at this point. If not, I have some more that are still coming in here. Well, let me just jump here then and say that Linda and Dr. Riley, you addressed this early on, is concerned because her 7-year-old son is having 3 to 7 bowel movements a day, very loose. He's getting open sores. So this is a medical problem. They've changed his diet, cut his medication. It hasn't helped. Where do they go from here?
Well, I think that it is, just my heart goes out to her, because I think that when you see your child where it's not just inconvenient, but where you feel like they might be in pain, or you know that this is a big issue, then you know it takes it to the next level for sure. So our hearts go out to you. But the my recommendations would be as follows. So one, that you're working with your doctor at your general. You start up the ring of the ladder. You know, start with your general practitioner. It sounds like you've already done some of those kinds of things. I would take it to the next step of going to a gastroenterologist and see what they have to say. You can also, we had one family that I know of that worked, and probably more that just haven't talked to me about it, but that actually worked with a nutritionist. So it was not as much, this person knew much more about food and ways and times for eating and combining different foods that really made a big difference. That's what I would suggest for, especially if he's got sores and things like that, you got to go with the doctors and, just kind of go up the ladder. Sometimes, when we find this a lot, or I hear this a lot from families, is that you would think that maybe a gastro doctor would know all about diet, and not necessarily. So this person really found that when we went to the dietitian, that that person actually, in conjunction with the information that the person learned from the other physician, really made the difference. So it may be that you have to go to a couple places. I know that's probably not real helpful, but I would look beyond that first person, if that makes sense.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the answer. Any other questions that any of you think are especially relevant to where our conversation tonight has been going?
I have one comment about that last question, if I can. I agree totally with what Karen said. I think, that's a great avenue. One comment I would have is that my younger son, Joe, he's always been a ball of anxiety. And one thing that we noticed, and I can't make this assumption about that person's question, but if it's consistently a loose stool, then, you know, obviously there is a problem. But Joe, we would notice that it wasn't consistently loose. But when he had an anxiety about something, like if we were going somewhere, or a social event, or sometimes even school, he would have an extremely loose stool. To this day, we still experience that. It will go not outwardly anxious, but inside him anxious. So
it's a great point. I mean, again, looking at the whole system, because the, you know, it's that's such a great point.
But, Jane, I think I've heard you say similar things.
Well, and I mean, and I noticed that Ian will have a wedding accident when he. Sometimes I don't know that he's anxious about something until he's had he's wet one day, and then I'll start looking at what's going on. Also, with regards to the bowel movement, though, you know, and we've never gone to a nutritionist, but I have watched what, you know, I do watch what he eats, because he does have a tendency towards loose stools. And I've noticed that, you know, even, you know, something as little as one strawberry can make a difference between, you know, it can give him a loose stool, that, you know, just one extra strawberry, or actually just one strawberry. He doesn't eat much fruit. Because it doesn't take very much to make it loose.
I've got another question here, and I'm going to take the time also just to tell people who are emailing questions is that we have such a tremendous response to this webcast. I don't think we've ever received this many emails, that there's simply no way we're going to be able to read every question here in the remaining 23 minutes. So hopefully your questions are getting answered. Those questions that we do not directly answer, you can either re-ask them in an email by sending it to Jane Dixon Weber, who's on tonight's call, our support services coordinator, and you can email her at the address treatment@fragilex.org. That's treatment, T-R-E-A-T-M-E-N-T, at fragilex.org, and Jane will see that that answer gets answered either by herself or by one of our experts. Another thing I want to point out is that the Foundation provides a free special topic brochure called Toilet Training and Fragile X Syndrome, Basic Principles and Approaches. It's a basic overview to get you started on this process, and you can receive this brochure by emailing the Foundation or going onto our resources page on our website or calling our toll-free number. We got an email from Jocelyn who says, this is a very timely call, and because I'm 4 days into potty training our 3-year, 8-month-old son. He has shown interest and seemed to have a good sense of when he was going or had gone. We threw away all the diapers and got underwear with characters, and he was very excited. Day one, we had little success with each day getting a little better. No, we had a little success with each day getting better. He's had several accidents and just doesn't seem to be getting into it. I think our successes are more a result of me helping him get on the potty in time. So my question is, should we stick with the approach of no diapers and let him have accidents, or do we stop and wait until he might be more ready, that is, asked to go? He isn't motivated by much, so trying the bribe approach isn't really working. Any other tips?
Well, I can tell you, with our older son, bribes didn't work, and more of a schedule approach works for him. He's much more OCD, and a schedule approach works for him. Now, our youngest son, forget about it. That's not it. It has to be a sensory type method, but that would be one. You know, we started with every 10 minutes going, whether he needed to go. We just went through that step process, like I said, start to finish, and he got it. It took a long, long time, but he did get it. And I don't think there's any overnight cure for toileting, at least in my experience, there's not.
Yeah, I think it's pretty rare when we hear of kids with Fragile X that do the toileting overnight. I think that there are a couple things that I want to mention that this brings up. I think 4 days in and she's seeing it gets a little better each time, and if he's willing and nobody's getting frustrated, I say great. They're bringing up the diaper issue, I think, is an issue that we hear a lot, and so I want to talk about that just for a couple minutes.
the whole thing about the diaper, there are pluses and minuses about diapering issues. And the first one is that we hear not uncommon to hear that, you know, well, the diapers are so absorbent now that, you know, they probably can't feel it, and so we want to give that extra because they have maybe decreased awareness anyway, that, you know, the underpants are a great way to go, and if the kids really like wearing them, and then, you know, all those things good. All right. There are diapers. My understanding is that now they have some potty training diapers that actually allow it you to feel a little bit more of the wetness. So that's another option if you're traveling or your school doesn't allow your child to go to school with, you know, if they're having accidents, et cetera. The other thing is a little bit I will let Jane talk about this a little bit. She talked about it in her article that's going to be coming out. But sometimes kids won't go unless they're in a diaper, okay? And we've had this a lot. Remember when we talk about kids needing that deep pressure, some of the kids, you've shared this stuff with me, that they like to wear their, their skin tight Superman suit underneath. They like that feeling, that deep pressure. They need it, okay? And so when you start taking that diaper away, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like it should feel. And so what we've done in the past is exactly what Jane described, which is technically in learning theory called shaping, where you allow the child to actually sit on the potty and poop in the diaper and then gradually take the diaper away. Jane, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, that's exactly what Ian needed, is he likes that tight fit around, the underwear, the diaper. And so, in the article, which just came out in the last quarterly, you can just see that I went through the process of very slowly taking the diaper away. And it ended up, the steps had to be so small that Ian really didn't even realize that I was that I was making a change, and so that was the key to it. And just over time, and it took 4 months. It took 4 months to take his diaper away when I was teaching him to do a bowel movement in the toilet. And the very last day, when he had that still half inch of diaper around his waist, a little security. You know, he looked at me and said, "I can." I thought, "Wow."
Right.
And, but you know, what I notice now is he still likes to wear his underwear tight. He's a young man, and he still likes to wear his small underwear just because it's skin tight. And I think, you know, I've even talked to, I think Cindy mentioned that. Is it Jake or Joe that likes the Under Armour?
Yeah, both of them wear it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been a lifesaver.
Can you tell us what that is, please?
Under Armour is compression pants that you can buy at Sports Authority or a sporting goods store, and the athletes wear them. They're like a moisture wicking, tight boxer type, like a spandex type boxer, almost like bicycle pants,
mm-hmm.
but without that padded crotch.
Okay.
And they're fabulous because they're a compression pant. They're less expensive than if you buy them, the actual compression pants from a therapy magazine.
Right. They're called in the stores compression shorts.
Okay.
I mean, and the good thing is that they're cool. Kids wear them all the time underneath it. Most of the kids that play sports wear them underneath their athletic shorts. So they are great. They're really cool. So
we started Jake with those at age 6. And the main reason we did was because of hands and pants. It wasn't really a toileting issue, but with Joe, it was a toileting issue. He was attached to the diaper, and we realized that it was that tight feeling. And
so let me go back to, just so that we're clear on this. I mean, I think that there, again, we've said a couple times that there are so many ways to look at this. You really have to understand what is the driving force behind either your child's resistance to something or need for something else, okay? The body, I say this all the time, the body will do what the body needs. We just have to be smart enough to think, figure that out, and then, like these guys, which are, you know, who are so great at this, of figuring out an adaptive way then to fill that need. Okay, it's not adaptive to still wear, you know, to need to wear diaper, but you know what? It's okay if you wear, you know, you can find something else that fills that same sensory need. So I think that's great. So either way, you can still stay with the diaper if it fills that need and go that shaping route, or you can go with the underpants. There's no really right or wrong way. I think it's really encouraging that after 4 days he is making progress. Oh, the last thing I was going to say is it's very normal, very typical for you to be trained first. So I think she said, well, I think that it's mostly we're successful because I'm catching the child, and that's how we do it. That's very normal. That happens with typically developing kids. You get on their schedule, you find that schedule, you get success that way, and then you're able to move away from it a little bit. So the things that she's doing sound great so far.
We have a question from Katie, and I've heard this very often about kids that will pee in the toilet when sitting on it, will wait, outlast their parents by sitting there for hours, not going, until they're taken off the toilet or have a diaper put on. And this is regarding her 10-year-old son. Is there a psychology going on here? Or is it just going back to the very same things we've already been talking about?
Well, it could be a couple of things. I mean, it could be that sensory thing that I need to have that in order to feel comfortable, in order to go. And again, typically what we do, what we recommend for that is shaping. The only other thing that can happen with, are sound things and, the sensory part of, like, either the pee splashing on their legs that they don't like, or, you know what I mean, those kinds of things. So one of the things that I would recommend would be looking at just that whole sensory system. What does your OT say that the child needs? If it is deep pressure, if they seem to crave that, then I would go back to Jane's recommendation about the shaping pattern, really, of putting them on the toilet while they have the diaper on. I would look at other things like, are they overly sensitive to sound? Do they feel like they're going to fall? You know what I mean? Those kinds of things are also things that might interfere with actually being able to relax and go ahead and pee while you're sitting on the toilet. So those would be my thoughts.
A question here from Tia, and I'm just going to sort of paraphrase here, but it has to do with boys standing and urinating. Is that an approach that a young, say, 5-year-old should be able to master? And are there special challenges around that?
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, I have one that sits and will never stand, and one that will do either.
Okay.
Appropriately.
Uh-huh.
So dad tried to teach the standing, and our older son, again, with the balance, I think is a lot of that issue. Mm-hmm. With our younger son, not so much. So I think it's individual, and I think it's good to be aware of your child and what their abilities are.
I think under the best circumstances, I have a 16-year-old. I was just going to run down and ask him, you know, can you try to have some good aim there? I don't know. So I think that there are attentional issues that can interfere with that as well. The thing that we have found to be successful generally are those. If it's not a sensory issue, if it's not a balance issue, and they seem to want to stand because their dad stands, I don't think that that's a problem with that. Know that it's going to be more messy because they They look around, they have ADHD types of behaviors. Putting the stuff in the toilet like Cheerios and having them shoot the Cheerios. They have targets now that you can buy that are flushable targets. That seems to, anything that can draw that eye contact down into the potty will keep keep their aim a little bit better. So, and it a little bit also it depends on, and I know this is going to sound kind of odd, but a little bit of it depends on their body build themselves. So if they have some kids that are a little bit bigger and they have a little bit of a bigger tummy and they maybe they can't see their penis as well. When they're looking down, it's, you know, they see their tummy instead. That makes it, of course, more difficult. Anything that we can do with that, that they need to be able to see it, will help with aim and with success. So if you have a little guy that's a little bit heavier or perhaps, you know, maybe when they're younger, maybe the penis isn't quite as big or whatever, sometimes those kinds of physical things can make that standing up again a little bit more challenging. But putting something in the toilet and having them shoot at it seems to be kind of fun and has worked with the attentional things, so you don't have them kind of spraying all over.
Can I ask, I'd like to ask you, all three of you, if you've ever had to encounter the issue of the children defecating everywhere except where they're supposed to and having them clean up after themselves as a way to help them to reduce that problem. Is that recommended or?
I've read that some parents have done that and have had great success. Ian always went in a diaper and always seemed to, he too didn't like it when he got it on his hands, and when he was cleaning himself up, if he got it on his hands, it kind of stopped him. But we worked through that. So we never really had that issue.
No, we didn't either. We had more of a problem with getting rid of the diaper as well. And the only times I've had a real problem was if they weren't feeling well. And, of course, I never made them clean it up. So,
hey, doctor, go ahead.
There are a couple things that you want to consider about what's going on there. It is not like common, but we do have children that, for whatever reason, will kind of play with their poop or, you know, those kinds of things. The key to when you have somebody clean something up and they've made a mess or whatever it is the ability to make that connection, that causal connection. Like, I did this, I don't really like cleaning it up, and so I won't do it again. Okay, so that would be the rationale, you know, that you're, that's a consequence for this inappropriate behavior, and the consequence is strong enough that it shapes the behavior and the child doesn't want to do it again. The problem is, there are a couple problems with that, depending on the child themselves. So, one would be, that the cognitive functioning of the child overall. So are they able to make those causal connections? This happened, and so now this is the consequence to that. If they can't do that, then it's just, you know, they're just like, why am I doing this? You know, I don't even know what happened here. Do you know what I'm saying? So the punishment, that's not going to shape that behavior back. The sensory aspects of that, of why somebody would, why a child would take their own feces and smear it all over, is, and I'm not sure if that's what they were talking about, which was taking it and smearing it places, or that they, you know, they just pooped somewhere and then went away. Do you
know
what
I'm
saying?
It's really, in this particular instance, it's an issue of just pooping anywhere other than the toilet.
Okay. So, the issue of if they poop somewhere, and except for in the potty, then what we want to do is figure out why they're pooping there instead of going into the bathroom. And we want to, again, kind of shape that behavior so that they have better, so that they can make that connection better of this is where you need to poop. Now, there may be a reason of why they don't want to go into the bathroom. Okay, so most people want to, you know, when they get to be, you know, a certain age or whatever, or even young kids will go somewhere by themselves to poop. Okay, so they want to go away from everybody, and then they go poop. You see kids go stand in the corner, and you're like, ah, they're making the pooping face, so I know that they're pooping. So they oftentimes, people oftentimes remove themselves. So the child may be removing him or herself. Okay, why aren't they removing him or herself? Themselves into the bathroom. Well, then we have to look at the environment that of the bathroom. So, is it a sensory thing then? Is it I'm not making the connection? That's a cognitive issue. But is it a sensory thing of I don't want to go in there because it's loud, it smells bad, it echoes in there, I'm scared of the toilet, I don't like to be up off the ground, all those kinds of things. So I would check to see if the child has an aversive reaction to the bathroom in general. Do they avoid the bathroom? When you put them in the bathroom, do they cry? Are there those kinds of things? I would use social stories. Cindy talked a lot about schedules so that you can see where you're supposed to go. The best part around that, I mean, you can have the child clean it up. I don't know whether that's terribly successful. And again, because of the cognitive functioning. And again, it kind of suggests that there's a willfulness or a volitional reason behind this action. So my suggestion, rather than going that route, and I'm always about prevention instead of consequences, so my recommendation would be, you know, and I know this is hard for a while, but to keep the diaper on if they're doing a lot, and then I would really look for those signs, everything else is not important except for watching to see when they go and where they go. And once you see them move out of your vision, they're probably getting ready to go potty or ready to poop. You want to, you know, pick them up and run them into the bathroom, okay? And so you want to catch them just about ready to go poop and bring them into the bathroom. And I wouldn't even put them on the toilet for a while. I mean, just get them in there and at least let them poop in their diaper in the bathroom. Right. Do you know what I'm saying?
Building
and then
that
again, that gradual
right.
moving onto the toilet.
Right.
So that's the way I would handle it without knowing all of the... There are some psychological issues around kids that either... smear poop around and all those kinds of things. And if that's going on, then I would suggest that you really do talk to a psychologist and really go through. Not that there's something they're crazy or anything like that, but that you want to kind of, we want to look at deeper levels of why those things might be going on.
So, Damien, I'm going to ask our callers, you to let have our two callers ask their questions. Because of the lateness in our webcast here, and I know ACT teleconferencing will let us go over, our stop time by a little bit here, so we'll go ahead and do that. I'm going to ask our callers to ask one question and then take their answer off the air. Okay, our first caller, Damien.
Our first question comes from the line of Kristen. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I was just wondering, I have a 15-year-old son. He's completely potty trained, number one, but not number two. And he doesn't have any of these fears of the bathroom or anything like that. I just can't get him to do number two in the toilet, and I wanted to know if it might be some kind of medical issue with maybe a muscle or something.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kristen. And I'm going to ask that, Damien, you let have our second question asked here, and maybe we can address both in these last few minutes.
Okay. Our second question comes from the line of Gina. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gina.
Hi. My son is 5 years old, and we went to the point where I documented the times of day, how long he was dry, and that kind of certain days were better than others, you know, going 3.5 hours dry. Tried that, and I've been trying to do, he understands wet and dry. We thought that might be an issue. He understands that now. My thinking was, and from hearing some others, was that, you know, I'm trying to wear underwear on him so he can feel that sensation better. of being wet and pooped. And he hardly ever poops in the underwear, but he does wet. And Praise works very well for him. And I understood, I thought at one point, not to use that Praise, just make it do, like, be a natural thing. So now just hearing these conversations, I'm thinking maybe I should go back to the reward system, or is he definitely not ready? Because he does have a lot of motor planning issues. He's nonverbal, but he can do the sign and say, where do we put the poop and pee, points to the potty, etc. So my question is, should I let it go for a while? Is he not ready? Or should I keep wearing underwear, having wet, you know, accidents, and just keep doing it?
Thank you very much. So I'm going to ask our guests if in these last couple of minutes we can address the issue, two issues that have been a theme tonight and in a lot of the emails. One is, so we have this question about Praise and the use of Praise and the appropriateness of Praise, but also the issue about older individuals, young adolescents, older adolescents, even some young adults who still have trouble, using the toilet for defecating, and how that in should be approached. So we could have a conversation about those two issues here, and then I just want to let everybody listening know that the foundation, the National Fragile X Foundation, realizes the importance of this issue, and I think all of the questions tonight really underscore that. And we are going to be building a new section of our website that addresses toileting issues in much more detail. And you'll also be able to find this webcast, because I think a lot of the email questions we're getting tonight have been answered already throughout the webcast. So I'm going to encourage everybody to go back and listen to this again, and then also to email other questions you have to treatment@fragilex.org. So could we address the issue of Praise and then just the issue of older individuals?
Well, I'll take the Praise one. I'd say praise them. If he responds to Praise, one of the reasons we talk about it not using too much Praise is that the anxiety for some kids, if you give too much attention to certain things, it can cause actually the reverse reaction. So the kids will, it's too much, and they don't like it. And so it's not actually reinforcing. But if it is reinforcing for your child, then I say yes, use Praise. I don't see anything bad about that. And you don't want to scold them when they don't, but if he's successful, then absolutely you want to use Praise, if it's effective for your particular child.
Right. Isn't it all about appropriate levels of Praise?
Yes.
So you don't do a trip to Disneyland every time they poop in the potty.
I think just saying good job, especially if he likes,
right.
When I hear the word Praise, I think it doesn't mean stickers and all that kind of stuff. It just means that you say they did a great job,
yeah.
and you're happy with what he did, and a very quick, hey, excellent, good job, and the high five and whatever he likes, and then move on.
Right.
I say good.
Right.
The only time you don't want to do it is if it's too much for the kid and it actually has the reverse effect, because it's too much attention, and the anxiety comes out and the social, you know, stuff kind of interferes with that. So that's when we say, hey, not so much Praise.
All right, thank you for that. Now let's address this issue, again, that is the subject of so many of the emails, and this one of the last callers here, about older individuals and the parents' frustration at will their older child ever be able to use the toilet appropriately. And I think we know the answer to that is yes, but how do we get there, especially if you've been working on it for 10 years and you're starting to just feel very frustrated? I'm going to ask Jane and Sydney, if you might just comment on that from just a parenting point of view, first of all.
Well, I can say that it seems like it's ongoing, you know, at times, but it will happen. And don't give up. And I think also after 10 years, let's say it has been 10 years, sometimes I find myself not having a fresh set of eyes anymore. That I'm just doing the same thing. I'm not trying anything new. I'm discouraged, and I'm thinking, this is the way it's going to be. So sometimes it helps to sit down and give yourself a talk and take a new perspective, or, as Karen suggested, have someone else with a neutral perspective give you an opinion about what they think might be going on.
Good advice, Cindy. Jane, anything to add to that?
I would just... you know, I think that's a really good point that Cindy said. And, you know, this would be, you know, because, I mean, Ian was, you know, close to 10 when I, you know, he too was going, he would go, he would urinate in the toilet, but he would only go in the diaper. And so I'm assuming that's what your son is doing if he refuses to go. And so, you know, taking it, taking that incremental step, you know, I don't know, you know, his abilities, you know, but this, in this case, this would be, you know, send me an email and let's talk about it.
Treatment and Fragile X. And Dr. Riley, if you could just, in your wisdom here, share with us just a few final comments again for those parents who have been struggling for this for so long. What are some of the basic themes they need to be looking at to get over this particular hurdle?
Well, I think one thing is that, and I think Jane and Cindy said it very well, that it is a continual work in progress. And I would also like to say that it is very typical that we see children with Fragile X that, you know, things come and go. They get a little bit better, and then sometimes we have a little bit of regression, and then things get a lot better. So one thing is perhaps to not think of it kind of as a, think of it more as a just a gentle curve going up rather than a stair step approach. That it's not, you're going to not get up to a step and then that all things are going to be fine and we never have to look back. Is not the way things work with our guys. So that would be one thing that I would encourage. And I would say that some of the literature that we show out there that says that children are, most of them are typically done by 7 or 8, let's give that some room there, that I don't think that everybody's completely successful, no accidents, anything by 7 or 8. We have lots of works in progress out there that are quite a bit older. The other thing that, again, that I would reiterate is that this is a very holistic issue, okay? And even the words like saying that he will pee in the potty, but he won't poop in the potty. Again, we may want to rephrase that even for ourselves to say, but it seems like he can't poop in the potty. And we want to think about them as, what are the stumbling blocks to their abilities to be successful here, and look at it from a cognitive perspective, language, sensory, physiological, all of those kinds of things, taking those into account. I'd also encourage you to talk to each other. It sounds like that listserv is lit up with those kinds of things. You can take solace in that. Again, I would reiterate one more thing that Cindy said, which is to go ahead and ask for help. Jane and the people that do the online stuff are filled with great resources. Certainly, I think we, as Robbie talked about, that we're going to try to beef up the toileting section online. And the last thing I would say is that there's no right or wrong way to do this, that part of it is really understanding your child, which we've heard over and over that you guys have a great insight to that. Use that, be creative, and then ask for help when you need it.
Very good. So I want to thank all of our guests tonight for this really, really helpful question and answer session. Jane, can you quickly tell us about the next webcast in this series?
Yes. So the next webcast is not until September. It is called Thriving, Not Just Surviving, and it's about family self-care. The guest speakers will be Diane Simon-Smith and Carolyn Tennyson, both parents of children with Fragile X syndrome. It is Tuesday, September 15th, and it will be at the same time. And we will send out email notification prior to it.
Wonderful. So everybody who did not get their question answered tonight, please keep checking back on our website. You might want to go to the My Fragile X Community, our Facebook-like site that you can reach from our homepage at fragilex.org. If you're not already a member of that community, now's the time to do that. Again, you'll find the link to that right on our homepage at fragilex.org. We'll be expanding our website section on toileting. We're going to be doing additional articles on toileting. I want to thank ACT Teleconferencing for making this possible tonight. And thank you again, Jane and Cindy and Karen. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen.